Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
We welcome you to Walking Between the Worlds. We are in a 13-week group of shows in which we are exploring, alternatively, 1 week we explore the relationship with self and with the divine and with the divinity within. And then the following week we explore relationships with others in our environment, romantic relationships, sexual relationships. Today we are exploring relationship as a temple of learning. Please make sure that you have a pencil handy and a piece of paper, because there will be a segment in which we will play you some music and give you a little bit of self-exploration work. At this time, we want to learn to utilize relationship to achieve silence of the mind, the hallmark of mastery. Explore ways to find the sources of power and insight relationship has to offer and how to meet the challenges it brings. Learn how to raise awareness through interaction with another. I want to read from the essay on love by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Each man sees over his own experience a certain stain of error, whilst that of other men looks fair and ideal. Let any man go back to those delicious relations which make the beauty of his life, which has given him sincerest instruction and nourishment. He will shrink and moan. Alas, I know not why, but infinite compunctions embitter in mature life the remembrances of budding joy and cover every beloved name. Everything is beautiful seen from the point of the intellect or as truth, but all is sour if seen as experience. What he is saying, beloved listeners, is beautiful and deep. He is saying that it is that when we look back over the loves lost, over the foolish things we did in the name of love, over the mistakes we seemingly made in our lives, that these things leave a bitter taste in our mouth, and we prefer definitely not to look at all those foolish things we did in the heat of the moment when we think of the loves lost of our life. But as he later points out in this beautiful essay on love, it is these very experiences that deepen our compassion, that open our hearts, that teach us so infinitely much, and that carve the pockets out of our soul that we may love deeper and deeper than before. We have on the show with us today a Nagual, and as we have explained, in fact, he was part of our very first show of Walking Between the Worlds. The Nagual Will is a very dear friend and a very, very precious brother to me. A Nagual is a very particular being with a lot of energy who is dedicated to leading others to lives of freedom from illusion. And I've invited him back on the show with us today. I always enjoy his company. And I've asked him to discuss with you what Toltecs know very well, which is the art of recapitulation. So I have asked him to tell us when we find those pockets of remembrances that make us cringe, what to do about them so they don't. Because you see, it is the suppression of memories. It's the suppression of pain or shame or humiliation of any kind that keeps us in the dialogue of our heads. And we have said to you today that you can in fact learn how to achieve silence of the mind by utilizing relationship to achieve it, and that that is the hallmark of majesty and mastery. We are now going to discuss recapitulation. And before I ask Will to tell us the steps that we go through to get rid of these cringing moments and, in fact, turn them into learning experiences, most valuable contributions of relationship. The scrutiny of past occurrences that still control our behavior will give, if we look at those occurrences, we will find that they are the ones that give us the knee-jerk responses to people, events, and beliefs. Recapitulation, the word means that it is a method to assist us to release debris and retrieve any part of ourselves that became lost due to past trauma. If we have any identity labels, a sense of self-importance, or if we are still judging people or events as good or bad, then we need to clear it. And recapitulation sometimes happens spontaneously, but more often than not, it takes a little bit of self-work. We're going to play you a song today, which I hope you will like, and at that time, I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of the self-work, to identify in your relationships the roles that you play vis-a-vis others. If you want to do this work by yourself, alone, try placing the people in your life in categories and year by year go through family, spouses, sexual partners, you know, students, bosses, etc. Sometimes we may receive snapshots of the past during the dream state. That is a signal that those events need to be released. It is also helpful if we can identify cyclical patterns in our lives. Many of the cycles that Nagwals teach about happen every 7 years or every 20 years. Watch for those cycles when big traumas occur or big growth spurts. This process actually occurs naturally at death. For several hours following death, our soul stays inside the energy field that surrounds the body, and our whole life passes in front of us. As we witness this, we are able to see it from a divine perspective. Welcome on our show, Nagwa Will.
Hello.
I love you, and I'm so happy you're with us.
I'm glad to be back.
And I'd like you please to talk about the 9 steps of releasing the past. For any person or situation that still brings up painful emotions, what do they do?
Okay. The steps to recapitulation, they don't have to necessarily go in order, but they can. The first thing to look at, and you said it really well when you said that you need to look, when you're looking for things to recapitulate, you're looking for things that you react to, and you don't want to be reacting when you're in the flow of life. And this gives you the clue on there may be some issue that you need to recapitulate. And to be successful, it's really important to remember how it appeared to us then when you're looking at an event in your life. Try to see it through the eyes of the other people that were involved. Try to relive the event emotionally from your heart, not just in your head. And try to look behind the experiences and grasp what's really going on. The first step is, what is the lesson? You try to look for the lesson that Spirit is looking to give you in this in this situation. For example, the lesson may be that we need to speak our truth, and it could manifest as laryngitis, or someone might appear to mirror us that we frequently suppress our voice.
An example, how would they do that? So you mean they're like violate our boundaries?
Yeah, they violate your boundaries to get your attention. You know, we need to protect ourselves by speaking our truth and telling them that their behavior is unacceptable. Accepting the truth, or accepting the unacceptable is dysfunctional, and it keeps us in our rut.
Oh, well said. People think it's saintly.
Yeah.
But it's dysfunctional.
Yeah, not if we're unhappy in it. Yeah. the second step to recapitulation is, what is the contract? Everyone we interact with in our life at any moment has made an agreement prior to coming into the body to assist us in our growth. They may have agreed to push us over the edge, and we may likewise have agreed to do that for them. You know, ask what the contract is and what am I playing out. It's difficult. people don't like change, and they go to great extremes to avoid change, even in dysfunctional situations. The reason most people dislike change is because they feel separated from the source. They believe they're alone and completely cut off in this world, and have no way to experience the nurturing of Creator. When we understand our contracts with others, it helps us to accomplish what Christ said, which is, judge not by appearances. And what he means is, when we are in the throes of these tough experiences, don't look at them, look behind them, look around them, look beyond them, look what they're doing for us.
You know, when I was smaller, I had several near-death experiences, and while in the spirit world, I was just amazed by the extensive contracts people had with each other. And it is with great love that many agreed to be a catalyst as perpetrators. And when we are in balance, there's no growth. Yes. So it's like a signal to the universe to knock us out of balance so these lessons continue. And, you know, we pull those relationships in that will test us in every way imaginable. We have to actually now take a small break for commercials. And when we come back, we'll ask the Nagual Will to continue to tell us our steps of recapitulation.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Bhavaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We welcome you back to Walking Between the Worlds. We have as our guest the Nagual, which is a specific form of mysticism followed by the Toltecs that is called Nagual Will. And he is explaining to us what to do when we have had, whether it's sexual or any other relationship form, when there have been things that we wish to forget. Instead, how to gain from them their insights. What is the next step in this process of recapitulation, Will?
The next step is a very important one. It is, what is the role? What role am I playing in this situation? Am I playing the victim? Am I playing the bad guy, the teacher, the student? What role am I playing? And really own that role, because it helps you figure out what you need to learn and how to let go of this. What role am I playing within this contract? Look at the role the other people are playing. For example, we may have a tyrant in our life. It may be our spouse, our mother, boss, child. Once you establish that, see who you are in relation to that person's role. Remember, we can change our role at any time because we are creating our own reality as we go.
And, you know, to our listeners, in a few minutes, we're going to play you some music, because in these sections, every other week, what we ask is that you do a little bit of self-work. We're going to ask you to identify roles that you play in your life, and particularly in difficult relationships. Now, what Nagual Will has said, I just wanted to clarify a bit. Everybody sometimes plays the child in the relationship. For instance, you can be really cute when somebody says, please do your laundry, and say, I'm so tired, please do it. In a very cute way, you're playing the little boy or the little girl, and the other person responds in more of a parental way. Those are fun games. And they're part of a dynamic relationship where sometimes you are the nurturer, sometimes your partner is the nurturer, sometimes you are the warrior, sometimes they are to protect the family unit, for example, or the coupleness. But the point is that if there is a permanent role that you are playing vis-a-vis a partner or a boss or a mother or anyone that is pushing your buttons, that is what we're going to ask you to identify.
Right. Please, the small roles you talk about, those spontaneous roles that we take on are a healthy part of balancing our whole self.
They are also part of playing through life, aren't they?
Yes. So the fourth aspect of recapitulation is what is the mirror. We pull relationships into our life that mirror an aspect of who we are, or what we have given away, or what we still place judgment on, what we haven't developed yet. And people, not only these people that we have made contracts with, they mirror these things to us. For example, if our innocence is gone, we may find ourselves attracted to a very young person. Or if we've given our integrity away, we might fall in love with a missionary, if that's integrity to you. Another thing that can be mirrored is that which we judge, and this is a good one because it gets us... I found with a lot of people that I work with and myself specifically that judgment is a very tricky thing, and we don't realize when we're doing it. If we have problems dealing with people who lie, sometimes we are placing judgment on them, so we could attract liars, and it turns into a circle. If a man isn't in touch with his feminine side, say, he might choose a woman who's overbearing in her femininity to make him feel more complete. Later, he ends up becoming frustrated and cannot leave town for the weekend because there might be, you know, a leak in the water pipes, and she wouldn't know how to handle it. So he's getting that heart filled by bringing that to him.
Yeah. So it comes back to bite you in the end.
Oh, it does every time. Every time.
The bottom line of it is, folks, no compensatory behavior. In other words, our relationship should not be formed based on what we don't have. They should be based on what we do have.
Right.
So I'm actually going to ask you to get your pencil and paper out. There's more to this, but I'm going to ask the Nagua Will to come back and give it to us a little bit later. In fact, shall we do one more really quickly? Or
yes, this is a good one, and it's a quickie.
Let's do one more really quickly.
The fifth aspect, and this is where we start to really figure out how these situations are, how we put these situations before ourselves to help us, how even the worst and most painful situations can be learning tools, and we learn to release them, and that's when we find what the gift is. Every person we encounter has come to give us a gift and receive one as well. And this applies even in the most casual acquaintance. Ask, what gift am I supposed to give this person? It may be something simple as offering, you know, the gift of unconditional love, or we may recognize something beautiful in them that nobody else has seen, or we may genuinely listen to a person for the first time in years, and this is really important in relationships, you know. Yes, dear. No, dear. Yes, I hear you, dear. Of course that's important to me, dear. But people know when you're really in touch and connected and listening to what they have to say.
That is so beautiful. Well, I think it's time for our listeners to do a little bit of work.
Good.
And what we're going to ask you is, just while we play you some music, we're going to ask you to write down areas in your life where buttons are pushed, and where you identify that that is the place where you have the most learning to be done, I'm going to ask you to, at the very least, identify the role that's being played. If that is easy to find, you may also want to go a little bit further and do the one that the Nagual has just spoken of. What is the gift that I've given this person? And secondly, what is the gift they're giving me? Hope you enjoy the music. We'll be back after our commercial break.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Bhavaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We are so grateful that the Nagua Will has come back on our show again. We have not had him on our show since the very first time when we were on the air. And welcome back to our listeners as well. Nagua Will, can you please explain to me how we go further from this? We have now done several questions. What is the gift? What is the role, etc.? Now what do we do to gain wisdom from the areas of our life where relationship has given a little bit of a bruised knee to us?
Yeah, and the last four aspects of recapitulation, they deal with our attitudes surrounding the answers to the first five questions. And the sixth one is, can I allow? This is where we discern what has to be allowed, what has to be changed, and finding the courage to act. Imagine yourself the water in a river, and if a rock is in front of you, you're going to stop or flow around the river. I use this all the time on my kids. I've told them this. I say, are you going to be the rock today, or are you going to be the river today? We create every situation in our life, and I've told them this, even the rock. So we just allow it to be there for a moment, and there it is. You know, and then we discern, is this battle ours? A battle is only worth fighting if the stakes are worth having. If you've already learned this lesson, why fight this battle again?
And the stakes that we're fighting for always is perception, isn't
right.
it?
Right, awareness, yes. The seventh aspect is, can I accept? It's very difficult to accept the painful things that happen to us in our lives, in these situations, unless we begin to see the perfection underlying the web of appearances. You know, a common belief is that we are placed on the wheel of reincarnation, suffering lifetime after lifetime until we've lived enough lives to be perfect. Well, we were created perfectly with the ability to be a creator. We are creators. And thoughts plus feelings create activity. The heart is like a microphone, so the stronger the emotions of our heart, the stronger the universe's response to manifest our desires. And the universe does not discriminate. It will manifest whatever we think, positive or negative. So it's important that we accept that we accept what we have co-created in the situation. And this will remove any feelings of having things done to us.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, it gets rid of the victimhood.
Right.
Great.
The eighth aspect is releasing. Can I release? Ask yourself. To release is to let go of the energy surrounding the person or the event. If we don't release, we keep it alive, and we'll find ourselves, feeding it through the same cycles and the same patterns, the same knee-jerk reactions to the same kind of events. That's how we know we're not releasing.
So you empower that which you are focusing on.
Yes, we empower that which we oppose.
Yes.
If we are in conflict with our partner, even if he or she has violated us in some way, the best thing to do is to walk through these steps and gain the insights. then release it by changing the focus and placing it into something positive, finding the lesson, the contract, the gift, and then that individual, they can become like vampires sucking your energy out until we cut the cord. And we do this through these steps. Every time we think of that person, we send them our blessings and the cord will be severed.
Aha, so that is why sometimes partners tend to want to deliberately engage us.
Yes.
Because it's feeding them energy because they've got people corded.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. And remember, we're serving them as well by releasing
so they can
patterns
grow.
And cycles. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Well said.
The last step is being grateful. If we've gone through these 9 steps and we can feel truly grateful for the insights we have gained, it raises your consciousness. Gratitude is one of the 3 ascension attitudes, and it's the culminating step. If we reach genuine gratitude, it assists us in connecting with our higher light bodies and turning hardships into ascension tools. And I personally have found that I've done a lot of recapitulation in this lifetime, and I find now that I can almost find the gratitude for the experience first and release it all that quickly.
Oh, how wonderful. It's a shortcut.
It's like a shortcut. Yeah. I mean, I've realized, I've come to know that this is so real and works so well that all I have to do is find the gratitude and feel it in my body.
I think that is wonderful, Will.
And it melts
Thank
away.
You so much. There's another thing that is a tool of Nagual's that is a very valuable tool that we want to share with our listeners. And I've asked him if he will talk about it as well. It has been an ongoing struggle for people that access reality in the feminine. It's a horizontal axis in the way perception is formed. It's a feminine way. And whether they are males or females, some people call them right brain oriented. Toltec Nagels, like myself and my brother Will here, call them the dreamers. And stalkers, on the other hand, are the left brain oriented people that are very analytical, and they are very, shall we say, masculine in their approach, whether they are males or females. Stalkers is the equivalent of a flashlight onto the ceiling that makes a small, very illuminated bright spot. Dreamers are a big diffuse circle. They pick up everything, but it's diffuse and it's so varied that sometimes they themselves don't really know what they've picked up. And they are drawn to each other in relationships. Stalkers have valuable gifts they give dreamers and vice versa. Dreamers, for instance, give them tremendous energy. And so they're drawn to each other, and then they have an extremely hard time relating and understanding why they don't. And so stalkers, those left-brain people, can you tell us a little bit of how to identify them in our relationship so we know whether we're married to a stalker or a dreamer?
Sure. In relationships, personal relationships, especially, dreamers will tend to find stalkers cold, calculating at times. They're less inclined to make small talk and think they're helping by analyzing their partners or the situation.
Which I'm sure they find patronizing.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah. Stalkers are the kind of people who, they'll fire orders one after one real quick. They're very calculating in what they know and what they want done, and they won't even stop to take a breath. And, the dreamers can't follow. They'll just sit there becoming dazed and not get a word of it, not understand a word of it. Dreamers can't assimilate such a deluge of information, and they get lost early in the conversations, and, they won't even know what the questions are.
That's an important point. They don't even know what the questions are because they possibly lost the stalker in the second sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But the stalker's mind is like a filing cabinet. And, to him it makes perfect sense, or to her it makes perfect sense, and then the dreamers don't know what they're saying.
Right. And the stalkers are often thinking, much farther ahead, not even as they're spouting orders, they're two minutes away in their conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. Stalkers tend to, sometimes they'll feel unheard because, you know, after they've carefully explained in great detail what it is that they're looking for, nobody seems to do as instructed or nobody seems to understand, you know, like you said, what the questions are. Sometimes stalkers will ask dreamers a question.
Yeah, they seldom make small talk. I mean, if they ask a question, it's either going to be abstract or profound.
Right, yeah. And they'll get an unclear or evasive answers, you know. And again, they'll feel unheard, not understanding the dreamers process the question by internalizing it, you know, feeling it in their heart and rolling it around on their tongue, kind of.
Yes.
And often when they think it's over, it could be days before they really get it. Stalkers, okay.
Well, you know what? We will take a little break for commercial. We just had a cue here in our ear that our listeners couldn't hear, but we know that it's time. We'll be back right after this commercial.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our segment on Walking Between the Worlds, where we are looking at relationship as a temple of learning. We have with us the Nagual Will, and he is explaining about stalkers, less brain-oriented people, and how to identify them. And then next he's going to take a look at how to see if you are married to a dreamer who accesses the world in a feminine way, whether they are males or females.
All right. Dreamers in relationships my wife is a dreamer.
No.
They feel unheard by stalkers,
ah,
which is me by nature. Stalkers find dreamers' questions to be out of place, not on track, not on the point. They're often dismissed as not contributing or being irrelevant. When dreamers express their feelings, it's often, you know, really emotional, and it appears to the frustrated stalker, that is, to be irrational or illogical. You know, I don't understand what she's saying.
Because they circle the topic.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Will
it's
you get to the point, please?
It makes perfect sense to them.
Yeah. So, there are a lot of gifts stalkers and dreamers can give each other, though. Dreamers have a knack for improving the quality of the journey through life. You know, I know I've learned a lot how to kind of emotionally feel the world as I go through it, through watching the dreamers in my life. You know, I've learned how to experience with my heart and body more of the divinity that is in everyday life through watching the dreamers in my life. They provide a lot of energy to us through their association.
And, you know, they often take longer to reach their goal, but the end product can be very, very creative content.
Yes, it is indeed. And it helps stalkers to find, realize, and nurture their own creativity.
Yes.
Stalkers are, you know, goal-minded people, and they bring organization to the dreamer's life. They're good at running daily life, you know, making order out of chaos, and something that appeals to dreamers who frequently have difficulty keeping, you know, the physical aspects of their life in order.
If I may say, until dreamers and stalkers see how to utilize the respective gift that each one brings to the relationship, like you've done with your wife,
mm-hmm.
the friction between these groups will be ongoing.
Yeah.
And many of us, we look for uniformity in our relationships, but that brings stagnation. The goal of having unity within diversity promotes the most growth, but requires understanding and patience and tolerance necessary. Can you give us a few tools for dreamers? How can they get on better in the world? Because I know that dreamers are very often very underestimated. Right. Our educational systems aren't designed for dreamers.
Right. Sometimes, you know, dreamers are seen as being slow. Their ratio of assimilating new information is like 21 to 34 in respect to stalkers. It will assist them to cultivate the tool of speed reading. That's really good for dreamers. Colleges, you know, they offer classes in this. Speed reading really helps them put information together in a left-brained way and quickly and make order out of things.
Yes.
Dreamers, sometimes, you know, they'll get overwhelmed when there's too much information coming at them. They need to take proper, you know, shorthand classes or develop their own shorthand system. And again, like speed reading, it's a way to calculate the things that are coming at them and put them in order.
And especially in the job force, this is very handy.
Yeah. other tools for dreamers. They hold long-term memory patterns well, but not short-term. You know, they need to try to cultivate better short-term memory, and you could practice with pieces of information they can afford to fail with, you know, something that's not real important, like reading numbers or phone numbers or something like that. You know, also when someone's giving them complex instructions or when the stalker is, you know, firing off instructions, they could use shorthand. And that will give them time to digest and sort out what has been said.
Because I've noticed from the dreamers in my classes, they need time to digest information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, like you say, they feel it with their heart.
Right. And it's in the classes especially, you know, you've learned especially how to kind of work around a subject and come at it from a more circular kind of enveloping notion than just firing it off. This is this and that is that, and that's the way it is. You know, you do it with story, you do it with example, and this is really much easier for the dreamers to put it together in the message that you're trying to get across. Stalker's tools?
Yes, please. Do give us that, because, you know, the other thing dreamers should remember, stalkers hold you accountable for every word you say. Dreamers sometimes ramble things off, too.
Yeah.
It's helpful to remember you better be accountable, because your stalker is taking mental notes, putting it in his mental filing cabinet.
And he will not forget.
So, tools for stalkers, not that well. Thank you.
One of the best tools for stalkers is being able to identify the dreamers in their environment and to slow down the instructions or conversations they use, you know, by using, like we talked about a minute ago, by using stories and humor, metaphors, when they're speaking. You know, I did recapitulation. I did the 9 steps with a few issues in my relationship to figure out that my wife was really a dreamer. She's a very organized dreamer, which made me think she was a stalker, but there were things that just weren't happening to my liking, and so I did some recap work on it, and lo and behold, she is a wonderful dreamer, and I've used that and her ability to kind of assimilate the things in life and turn them into to take things that I wouldn't normally recognize as lesson and information and turn it into such. So just the point to realize who the dreamers are and what they're here to do for you, and taking advantage of that has been one of the largest tools for me. Stalkers should also remember that dreamers can be more intelligent than they are perceived to be.
Our systems don't allow them to shine, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. And most people are dreamers, right?
True.
Yeah. Stalkers, sometimes they'll get impatient with dreamers, and by now the dreamers tend to shut down when the stalkers get confrontational or blaming or controlling. You need to watch that.
Yes.
Stalkers, sometimes they will isolate themselves from others unless they loosen their expectations. It's slowing down. It's opening up. Being over-focused on the results can alienate the rest of the team. And dreamers, they look at time differently.
And also they really prize that quality of the journey, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that anyone and everyone needs to learn to appreciate. Stalkers also need to have what to them seems like meaningless social interaction in order to get dreamers to relax around them so that the stalkers can be heard. If the stalker has a dreamer boss, social co-workers may be promoted over him because the value dreamers place on the quality of the journey. Stalkers should also remember that most dreamers say things they don't mean when they're emotional. That's a very important one. They should, try to learn to listen behind the words and, figure out what their intent is, using their heart instead of their head. And the dreamers can teach the stalkers how to do this well, how to use your heart and think with your heart and not your head all the time. Ask a few questions when the emotions are all spent.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate that you have come on the show.
This
information has been most valuable to our listeners, I'm sure. And to our listeners, we are very, very happy that you joined us this day. And next week, we have the power of self-reliance to cultivate the inner relationship. Thank you so much for joining us. And the music on today's show comes from An Affair of the Heart. The CD you can obtain from www.elmeanandpaul.com. Thank you very much.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.